This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. Pleased to welcome the brand new producer of Jeffrey Wright and Company. George Ruggiero will be our producer. George, it's good to have you, buddy.
Great to be here. How are you, sir?
I am well. Go ahead and give George a follow on the old socials, at KingGeorge94. Glad to have you here, buddy. My company is, he is every Thursday on the program. Writes about college football and college basketball for CBS Sports. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
Hey, good day. I write about college basketball and college football, and I commiserate with the Memphis Grizzlies and their fans. You can add that to my title. I'm a commiserator in Grizzlies misery.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of obviously where we got to start. And we'll start with the Grizzlies. Let's tell everybody we got coming up on the program. Eric's going to join us here at the bottom part of the hour. Spirit of full disclosure, Eric and I had to record earlier this morning because he's currently on the plane right now heading to Dallas. So Eric and I recorded. Then Cobb will hop back on to start the second hour. Lots to get to there. We've got Darius Slay talking about whether or not Jalen Hurts is elite. Got to weigh in on that. Big night of college hoops. We're getting down the stretch, Ryer, or down the stretch. And I want to also talk with Cobb. We've also had hot seat stuff, how this kind of impacts kind of a larger big picture money question about college sports, because I think there's a few things happening that I wanted to discuss that with you. Also, maybe we'll talk some college hoops for tonight. We'll tell your story, and then we'll get out of here. But I guess, Cobb, let's start with the first question. With the Grizzlies last night, you fall to Oklahoma City. And honestly, maybe I'm insane for thinking this. I was not upset with the effort last night. I actually thought if they would have played as hard as they did last night, that they would have won both the Atlanta game and the San Antonio game. But you're clearly going up in competition, and you see that there's a gap. And a pretty wide gap between the Thunder and the Grizzlies. But if they would have given that effort, I think we would be talking about, okay, this team's won 40 games, but they're not as good as the Thunder, so what? But that's not what's happened. So I guess the first question that I have for you is, how bad is it?
Well, I think you can say, rah, rah, great effort, good try, boys, and feel okay about yourself if you haven't lost three in a row going into last night. The fact that you're now on a four-game losing streak and that your best player, Jaren Jackson Jr., is week to week, which who knows what that means. I mean, are we going to have to reevaluate the whole 65-game thing? What happened to the defensive player of the year odds? I mean, there's massive ramifications with that beyond just this year's season, so his injury. Combined with the fact that, I mean, last night, you actually felt like early in that fourth quarter, you had a chance. You had Scottie Pippen Jr. bringing some energy. It felt like the Grizzlies were in that game, and then they just got smacked across the brow in the middle of that fourth quarter and blown out completely. So it's that to me was the discouraging part about it. You got yourself to a position where you were in the game, felt like you were on even footing with the Thunder in the fourth quarter, and then you just let it slip in that fourth quarter, exposed the chasm. And yeah, that's the problem for me. It's not that you lost to the Oklahoma City Thunder, so you've lost four games in a row, and there is a chasm between you and the best teams in the NBA right now. And I don't think the Grizzlies are particularly close to bridging that chasm.
And I think that's kind of the other question that I have is, for me, like the way that I'm viewing it is, they're clearly playing the worst basketball of the year. Like I don't really think that's debatable. I wouldn't even circulate that under hot take. I also fundamentally believe you're never as good as your best basketball, and you're never as bad as your worst basketball. And there is kind of an element of, you and I are big baseball guys. You know, the Major League Baseball team in August, even if they're like decent, even if they're in the playoff race, you can just kind of tell they just kind of are, they're going through the motions in August. And then if it's a team that's out of it, they're really going through the motions in August. Like, I feel like the amount of fights that you'll see in August always ticks up because everybody's just kind of ready to be done with it. And so I wonder if there's an element of that, because what I find most discouraging right now is there's legitimate talk about effort. And Santi had mentioned it on Saturday night, and when Jaren was asked about Santi's comments, Jaren co-signed. And then last night with Taylor Jenkins, he's constantly now referencing like having to have the right focus, the right energy. Like when you look at it, it's like, okay, he's calling out the players, saying they're not playing hard. And while sometimes I think people make too much of it, oh, calling the players out, it's like, no, I felt like he was just saying what everyone's seeing that's watching this team. And the next question then becomes is like, okay, what's the way out of this? And that's where I think it starts to get, that's where you start to get bummed out, because part of this, to me, it's like the only way that they can truly improve is Ja has to play better. And I've been on this train, I feel like, for a month now. I don't know if he can play better, and this isn't calling Ja out. I think Ja is hurt, and I think he's playing hurt. And we'll get into his comments from postgame later. But then you then throw in what you were talking about. Like, Jaren's playing the best basketball of his life, and up until Monday night, he'd played 56 straight games. And now the thing that is really obvious is, Cobb, if he is not on the floor, they can't stop anybody.
Yeah, and nor do they have somebody who they can just give the ball to and say, hey, go get us a bucket. Because right now, Ja is only partially that. He used to always be that. He's only partially that now because he's not finishing at the rim at a very high clip relative to the past. His three-point shooting is abysmal right now. Teams are backing off of him, just asking him to shoot the three. So then you end up in a lot of isolations with Desmond Bane. That is not fruitful, especially against better defenses. So your source of buckets has dried up too. And it's a situation where I don't know what they're good at. So yeah, okay, I think the Grizzlies are eventually going to figure this out. As bad as they've been for the last four games, this is not who they're going to be for the rest of the season. But my problem is, you look around the West and look at what some of these other teams are doing. The Grizzlies are 2-6 since the All-Star break. The Lakers are 7-1. The Warriors are 6-1. All of a sudden, the Nuggets are 4-3 since the All-Star break. They're ahead of you in the standings now. The Timberwolves are only 500 since the All-Star break, but they have the number 27 strength of schedule going forward. They've got a cakewalk the rest of the way. So it's like, we've gone from, okay, who would we want to play in a 2-7 matchup where we're the two, versus now I'm looking at this thing and thinking, are the Grizzlies going to end up in the play-in? Is that where this is headed? And I'm legitimately concerned about that.
So there's 20 games left. And there's four games separating the Grizzlies from seven, correct?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Four games in 20 is kind of tough. I'm not saying, like, listen, if they play like they have the last four games and Jaren misses, like, let's say Jaren misses the rest of the month. I mean, it's possible. I still think, though, math would say the floor is like the six.
I hope you're right, man. But without Jaren, I think it's all up in the air. I mean, did I hear you right? He had played 56 consecutive games.
Missed the first two.
I mean, that's amazing. That's amazing, and it's unheard of in today's NBA.
Sorry, 58 straight games, right? Because he got hurt in game 60.
I mean, he's been the steady, the constant, the rock, the anchor of this team this season. And has put them on his back because Ja's not been Ja. And,
heck, I mean, technically he technically played 59 straight games, but he got hurt in the 59th game, like whatever, 90 seconds in.
Right. Yeah. So you got to reinvent yourself now without him. You become so reliant on him on both ends of the floor. That's me. It's like everybody's wanted to criticize Taylor Jenkins all season. I've never really been all that interested in it because I think he's a pretty good coach. They're implementing a new offense. They've been at the top of the West, like whatever. I mean, y'all want to get mad about certain late game lineups and stuff. I mean, sure, fine. Like you probably shouldn't have had Zach Edey on the floor in a switch situation late the other night, you know, when you're losing home games over the weekend, like whatever. I get all that. Now, though, I think is a real test from a coaching standpoint, because what do you do? Where do you turn? How do you manufacture wins down the stretch and keep this thing on the rails when you are missing Jaren Jackson Jr.? That to me will be the ultimate test kind of Taylor Jenkins as a coach, more so than anything we've seen to this point this season.
Yeah, I'm like you with the Jenkins thing, and I come at it from a little different perspective. Do I think that there are legitimate coaching criticisms and gripes that are out there? Like, yes, duh. I don't think any coach is perfect. I mean, I think Spoelstra is the best coach, and I think he makes mistakes. Like, I don't think any coach is perfect. With that said, what has always been difficult for me to define is what is Taylor Jenkins like? How much of it is like, I don't think Taylor Jenkins has autonomy. Like, I think Taylor Jenkins is the basketball equivalent of Dave Roberts, where when you watch a Dodgers game, you see Dave's got that notebook and basically it's like, it tells him when to change pitchers, like what, like it follows a script, and the Grizzlies seem to follow a script. Like, so I don't think Taylor Jenkins is doing anything that the front office is uncomfortable with. So there's always kind of a, like, I don't really know how much is him per se, but what I definitely think you're 100% right is right now his team to me has at least an effort problem. And at the minimum, he seems to be culture guy. Well, that's culture.
It also seems like a player problem. It seems like a leadership problem in the locker room.
I agree. I think when you watch them, the things that kind of stand out to me are, as mentioned, effort. And then B, like, who is the leader? Like, I think we know who should be the leader. But this is my biggest problem with Ja right now. I understand he's frustrated. And I am sympathetic to him being frustrated. I don't think that players are robots. I understand they're human beings. But what is so obvious is the team, the fans, everything is so impacted by what his mood is that that's not leadership. Because in the end, like last night, you're watching every huddle. He's got guys trying to pick him up. It's like, you're the tone setter. And like right now, like to me, it's like that the biggest problem with Ja is like he's being a bad leader. And it was the same problem that I had when the game where he was wearing the ski mask or whatever, you know,
I remember.
Like, do I think like what he did is like some crime? No, the problem that I always have is when you do something like that, then your teammates have to answer for it. They're the ones that get asked. Like, that's always been my issue with it. Do I personally care? Like, did anything that he do offend me? No. But it's kind of the same thing over and over. It's like, I don't think I don't think he's recognizing the impact that his mood is having on everything.
Yeah, maybe a lack of self-awareness, an inability to fully recognize what he means to the team, not just in terms of performance, but in terms of demeanor, attitude, all that. If I wore a ski mask to the show, would you say I was being a bad teammate?
We did, during the height of the pandemic, when we were coming back, Mark and I did kick around the idea of doing a show in a mask. That was kind of before.
Sounds terrible.
Well, that was like before, you know, like there was like this weird period, like for a while, like the first like couple of weeks, people were like wearing masks, like because of quote unquote safety. And then masks turned into like a symbolism of like, are you a Republican or not? And then, so like we were doing it like at the peak of that. So we were going to kind of poke fun at that. I mean, my thing is, so last night you get the comments from post game that, you know, I'm playing. I don't know if I should have been playing, but y'all are going to write what you're going to write. And this is kind of the other thing that I've noticed with NBA players right now. There's been this instinct to like point fingers at media when I think it's actually misplaced blame. There's nobody in this market that twists Ja's words or uses it against them. There's nobody on this beat that is like a gotcha type writer, questioner.
Not at all. Not at all.
And what happens is like the NBA players, there's become this groupthink. And like you see it with LeBron, like, why would you want to be the face of the league? Like, look at what they say. And I think the problem is what they're referring is not actual media. I mean, I guess you could say LeBron was like
bloggers. It's social media.
It's their replies.
Yeah.
It's Twitter.
So, but what happens is a beat writer puts out an innocuous quote about Ja, maybe saying my shoulder didn't feel 100% tonight or something like that. And then everybody replies to it and says, oh, he's soft, right?
Right.
And so now it's like, because I said this to a well-meaning and respectable local reporter, now I'm getting put on blast. So you feel like the media is your enemy when all they're really doing is conveying what you're saying, but then it gets taken out of context by the morons who inhabit our society and hide behind anonymous Twitter accounts, right? But the thing is, like, Ja's got to have thick enough skin to not let that affect him and not let that bother him. And I mean, he needs to be singularly focused on basketball at this point in the calendar, right? And not on what people are saying and, you know, what his replies are like. And that, to his credit, this is why he's gotten off of social media. I think he recognizes
I don't buy it. No
chance.
You
think he's got like a few burners out there, right?
0% chance he's off social media.
Yeah. He's probably got a few burners. I'd be off of social media if I didn't work in sports.
this is my whole deal. It's like when you announce you're leaving social media, I never believe you. Like, when I think about it in these terms, like, I'll use Selena Gomez as the example. Selena was going through mental health things, and she's like, turned it around and living her best life. And she was asked in reports, like, what did you do? She's like, I got off of social media. She didn't announce that she was leaving social media. She's like, I just got off of it. And that started to pick me up. We're having the same issue that we have always with Ja. It's like that impacts his mood in such an unbelievable way that it's like, it's clear to me that it's not good for him. And I don't buy the excuse of, I have to be on there for my sponsors. There are plenty of athletes that are on social media and they hand it off to an employee.
And they probably don't even know the password. They probably don't even 100%. Have the app on their phone.
They don't even have it. Correct. And it's part of the
just canned promotional stuff posted by somebody who runs it for them. Sure. It should be that. And then, I mean, look, I think this is also where you miss the presence of a veteran leader, of a Marcus Smart. I'll say it when you're in this mired in this stretch.
In fairness, you and I said it in real time. We did this very show on the trade deadline. And the whole time, like when we were trying to figure out, okay, what did they trade? How, like, we basically, like, in real time, I asked, I was like, why do this now? If you were going to attach a first-round pick, I never bought the argument they had to do that deal that day. If you were going to attach a first-round pick and say, somebody come get Marcus Smart, someone would have done it in the summer. But they don't value. Yeah. That's kind of my big complaint. It's like, my biggest front office complaint is that I don't think they value the I don't think they value toughness.
It's because you can't quantify it. You can't quantify it in analytics, and so much of sports nowadays is what you can quantify that we miss out on the intangibles sometimes. We miss out on things like leadership. We miss out on things like toughness.
Honestly, you could also tell me, you know, sometimes what happens with tough guys, they're a little difficult. And sometimes maybe they don't buy in and whatnot. But there's a need for them. Now, you don't need a team full of them. Then you have chaos. But it just seems to me, it's like when you look at what they value, it's like it's never toughness or physicality.
Well, this was my whole concern going back to when I was on the beat and they were going to be remaking the franchise. I mean, complete makeover. They had traded Marc Gasol. They had traded Mike Conley. They were going to be drafting Ja Morant, going all in with Jaren Jackson Jr., a second-year player. This is the year they drafted Brandon Clark. And you know what? I thought, all right, head coach, they're going to go out and get somebody who can be a culture driver, right? Somebody who's got some experience, who's been around the league. And now they went out and got a young 30-something who'd never been a head coach before in Taylor Jenkins. And it was like, all right, seven years ago. It's like, where's the leadership going to come from? And it hasn't really, I don't think, been a problem until now because they've been rising together, right? And they've been figuring it out as they go. And it's been mostly very successful, absent last season when you had a lot of injuries. But now it's like when you get in these funks and you got to get over the hump and you're in a four-game losing streak and you're losing ground in the Western Conference standings, is it the coach? Is it the players? Is Zach Kleiman got to walk in there and give a motivational speech? Like, who's going to get them to get this thing back on the right path? Who is the leader? Especially with Jaren Jackson Jr. out. When he's in, I don't know that he's the rah-rah guy, the guy who can galvanize the troops. He's maturing. He's growing. He's having the best season of his career. And, I mean, his maturation and development is off the charts. But is he the guy that the troops are going to rally around? I don't know the answer to that. I don't think the Grizzlies know the answer to that. And I think that's a huge problem right now because this thing is going in the wrong direction and it's going there fast. Your star player's banged up. Maybe he shouldn't be playing. Maybe he's letting social media affect him. I don't know who you turn to for leadership right now. And that's where this franchise is at. It's a problem. I don't know how they fix it. I don't know how this gets back to a point where we feel like anything is going to happen for this team in the postseason. Because at this point, man, you watch the way they play in the fourth quarter against the Thunder last night, and I'm just thinking, I mean, I just hope they don't get swept in the playoffs. And I hadn't thought that way since Jason Williams and Shane Battier were on the team. And that's where I'm at now. It's like, I just hope they don't get swept in the first round of the playoff.
Yeah. So this is kind of the other thing that I've been thinking about, because as you mentioned, like, it seems to me there are a lot of paths to a first round exit. I think we'd both agree, right? But I think it's really kind of coin flip. Like, unless they're playing the Thunder, I think there's going to be a lot of series that are like coin flippy. Like, you can't, like, listen, I understand the Lakers are playing well, and I understand that the Warriors are playing well. If Jaren's healthy, they're going to have just as much a problem stopping Jaren as the Grizzlies are going to have stopping Luka and LeBron. Like, that's going to be a problem for them. Denver has not shown the depth that they have, that they did when they won a title. You look at the Clippers, like, I think the Clippers are a bad matchup for them, but the Clippers always feel like they're a Kawhi injury away from this thing being a complete coin flip.
Right.
The Grizzlies live inside Minnesota's head. Like, there are paths to where they win a series, and as long as, like, to me, it's like, as long as they avoid Oklahoma City, like, you can talk me into a path to where they could win two series, and then all of a sudden we're just on to next year. The bigger issue, though, that I see is these problems are still going to be impactful next year, because I think they really have to address Cobb. They have a leadership void right now, but they really have a physical and toughness void.
Well, and the long-term idea, right, is that Vince Williams Jr. provides some of that. Maybe he still will this season. He's still getting back, you know, to full speed after a bad run with injuries. Can you find a defender somewhere inside of GG Jackson? I mean, if you could, then he could bring some of that, because he's got good size on the wing. It's a massive problem, though. I mean, they can't stop a nosebleed right now.
Think about how much different. Think about when last night, how difficult it felt for the Grizzlies to score And then at times, just how easy it felt for the Thunder.
It's night and day. You're just hitting them with a Desmond Bane ISO, and then they're coming back getting wide open threes on the other end of the floor. So,
and honestly, that was the problem at the end of the Hawks game, because when Ja's not there, Dez was awesome, but then in the fourth quarter, when it kind of tightened up and it was Dez ISO ball, I mean, they went like 4.5 minutes and got basically two shots.
Right.
And so,
yeah,
I think the other thing, though, with Ja is we're now moving into victim territory. And I guess this is the only thing I would say. How many psychiatrists, psychologists, mental health experts, how many of them would sit there and go, you know what a great approach to life is? Feeling sorry for yourself. Is there a single
probably
one?
Not many, Jeffrey. Probably not many. Probably not many.
And it's like, I understand. Like, to me, it's like, you can understand the frustration. But think about it like these terms, man. Everybody doesn't feel great every single day. Guess what? We all got to go to work. And I think that's the other thing that's like you're starting to realize is that I don't sense, it's like, set Jaren aside. It's like, if we were at a team meeting, it would be, Jaren, you're dismissed. This doesn't apply to you. I just don't sense a great amount of professionalism. And like, I don't know which broadcast you got, but I'm a loyal guy. I always go with, if Pete and Brevin are on, I'm watching Pete and Brevin. And Brevin mentioned in the second quarter, enjoy competing. And it's something that's simple, but it's like, man, that was so spot on, because when you watch them right now, it's like, it just doesn't look like they enjoy competition. And I think they're really, and maybe this is a Ja thing, but it's like, they're front runners, man. When it's going great, it's going great. And part of the reason why actually at times I felt decent about them last night was that was the first time in a while that I felt like they took a punch and they kind of fought back. Because in the first quarter, man, I was thinking like, oh boy, this thing could get sideways, because the Thunder were starting to separate. SGA was starting to get going. And in the second quarter, I was like, this could be like night. But they fought and they kept it like within six at that break. And to your point, like, they kind of fought back to start the fourth quarter. But like, we've not seen a ton of that. It's like, when it's going well, it's going really well. But when it ain't going well, it's like, there's just not a lot of fight. It's like, they're massive front runners.
Yeah, because everyone's going to defer to Ja. He is the team leader. He is the superstar. He is the face of the franchise. Regardless of what your place is in the hierarchy of the Grizzlies rotation, you're going to defer to him. Even though a lot of these other guys might have better leadership characteristics and leadership qualities, it's not their place in the hierarchy to take those reins and sort of drive the culture. That's on Ja. So he didn't ask for that, right? But that comes with the territory of being a superstar, is that the team is going to follow your lead. And when your lead is, I'm hurt, I'm 100%, I'm going to complain about the refs, then the rest of the team, the morale of the team suffers. And so, that's where they're at, man. The shoulder is clearly an issue. Like, I don't want to downplay that. His three-point shooting right now is bad. And that's, I think, a direct reflection of the fact that his shoulder is a serious issue. It's his right shoulder, right? It's his shooting shoulder. So I don't want to downplay it, but Ja is still so athletic, such a good passer, so good at getting to spots on the floor, that he can still be an effective player even with this injury. He's just got to acknowledge the fact that, hey, look, I'm not 100%. I'm not going to be the best version of myself right now, but my team needs me, right? So I can go out there and still be effective even if I'm not 100% all-star version of myself.
Well, 100% agree, because to me it's like, okay, well, you played. What are things that you can control? You can get back on defense. Like that requires, you can do that with a bad shoulder.
Right.
And like, I do think, like, one thing that I liked from Jenkins last night was, like, it's game 62. Ja, they're not calling it the way that you're used to them calling it. The game changed after the All-Star game last year, particularly in the paint. They are allowing a lot more contact. And before everyone goes, what about SGA? There's a key difference to me. Ja got a ton of whistles when he was in the air. And they've clearly decided, like, that's just, you leave your feet and you get contact of that, like, you're not going to get many of those calls. Well, SGA is kind of like a wizard, is that, like, he gets the contact before he leaves the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, those two things are not the same. But also, it's game 62. Make an adjustment. And for everyone that's like, well, the guys that whine, they get calls. Well, if that's the case, then why is Ja still whining? Because to me, it's like, it hasn't worked. And so at least, like I thought last night with Jenkins getting the tech, it's like, I appreciated that more, which is like, all right, let's take this out of Ja's hands, put it in my hands. But it's not working and it's not helping. All it's contributing to is A, a lack of calls, and B, asking all the other guys on the team to go after cover because you don't want to get back on the floor.
Yeah, that's a pet peeve of mine. And I mean, this is not unique to Ja, but when you're already a bad defensive team, and then you're leaving your squad in a 4-on-5 because you're complaining about a no call. Yeah, that's a rough look, man. I'll say this. Ja has not missed a free throw in 5 games. 6-for-6 last night, 7-for-7 against the Knicks, 14-of-14 against the Suns, 7-of-7 against the Cavaliers. He hadn't missed a free throw since February the 20th. So, yeah.
I think that's what's actually frustrating about the three-point shooting is, like, he's having his best year at the free throw line, it feels like.
Yeah, he's just not getting the whistle anymore. I thought Scottie Pippen Jr. was to maybe end this on a positive. I thought he was good last night. And I the energy he brought earlier in that fourth quarter was like that. That's what this team has been missing. The willing to go off script and just make things happen and fly around a little bit. That was just nice to see. I feel like it's been a long time since FedEx Forum got on its feet and got really fired up for a role player rising above and beyond the call of duty to do something interesting. And that was great to see because he's not necessarily been a huge part of the rotation as of late. But, man, I'm watching him go out there and play well against the Thunder, and I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe there's a spot for Scotty out there. So, I mean, if there's a silver lining to be found in that turd last night, I felt like what he brought them could maybe be that.
I think they're going to have to figure this out. It's like, what do you do with Ja right now? Because if to me, it's like, if you're going to do this balancing act of he's clearly banged up, like someone's going to have to do the math. Like, do we just need to sit him down for a month? Because I'm not so sure this whole playing through the injury, I don't know if that's working. But I suspect that I suspect that they'll tell you, like, hey, man, it's like giving him a month off, he's still going to deal with pain. And so it's all just been a pain tolerance thing.
So if you sit him down at the same time that Jaren is week to week, then you're basically resigning yourself to the play-in. At that point, you're just going to continue to slide here. So it's just the scary thing about this situation is that the Grizzlies are now going to be grasping and flailing around looking for the on switch with their back against the wall. And that's never a comfortable position to be in because Jaren's going to come back, maybe a few games left in the regular season, and they're going to be trying to put it all together on the fly again. Whereas the rest of the teams that they're going to be competing against in the West have steadily built to the All-Star break and are now fine-tuning post-All-Star break. The Lakers, the Warriors, the Thunder and the Nuggets may be starting to figure it out as well. That's what's scary. It's like the Grizzlies are out here flailing around while their peers and their competitors are fine-tuning, and they're not going to get a chance to fine-tune until April. So it's at least, you know, late April. So that's worrisome. That's not a good position to be in.
No, and I do think, like, okay, it's like, how bad can it get? So if you take a look at the remaining 20 games, by my quick math, I think they'll be favored in 7 of them. 7-13. It's like, what does that end up getting them? I still
45 wins, which, I mean, it was what, around the Vegas preseason total?
I think it was 43.5.
Yeah. So, like, at the end of the day, not the end of the world, but given where this thing is, has looked like it might be going, that'd be extremely discouraging.
Yeah, I'm trying to see like what that would mean. Okay, so if they go 7-13, that would put them at 45. Is that 45-37?
Correct.
Okay, so 45-37. I hate ESPN's interface. All right, so that would mean the Rockets would have to go 8. The Rockets would have to win 8 the rest of the way because they finished tied. The Rockets would get ahead of them, and that would mean in their remaining, the Warriors would then have to go 11-9, which seems possible. All right, that you could get past. And then you would have to have, so the Timberwolves are 35-29, so that's 64. That means they have 18 remaining games, and they would have to go, they'd have to win 11 because you've won the season series. They would have to go 11-7. I mean, I guess you're right. If like they go 7-13, it feels like, though, if they can just go 10-10, it's going to be really hard to fall below 5.
Without Jaren Jackson Jr., with a banged up Ja Morant, and with the number 11 most difficult schedule, I don't know. 500 seems like a best case scenario, especially given what we've seen lately. If they had gone 45-37 last year, they would have been 11th, 11th in the Western Conference. On the back end of the play in.
Yeah, the records got kind of inflated because the Grizzlies were so bad. Like, there were like three teams that were like contending that were just god awful, that weren't supposed to be bad. And so everybody just beat up on them. Whereas like this year, you just kind of have Pelicans and Jazz. And like, that's the other annoying thing. It's like, they're getting ready to go play the Pelicans. And if you just look at the Pelicans record, you're like, that should be a win. Well, post All-Star break, like since Zion's been playing and playing well, like, that game's a coin flip at best.
Jeffrey, how do we get here?
I think we got here because, like, in the end, you know what irritates us as fans? It's just watching a team go through the motions. Like, we don't ask you, like, you don't have to make every shot, but like, give us some effort. I think that's what really just, that ends up disturbing everyone. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's see if Eric's got a solution to all this. Eric will join the program next. Stick around. You'll listen to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games, or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 3-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Eric Hasseltine is the Memphis Grizzlies radio network play-by-play announcer, kind enough to join us each and every Thursday before he heads out with the Grizzlies as they'll take on the Mavericks and the Pelicans. I guess, Eric, let's start here, because to me, the big question is, Are the vibes worse than the Grizzlies right now?
Yeah, I'd say that. I mean, you got to put it in perspective. It's an 82-game season. You're going to have ebbs and flows. Certainly losing three games in the last possession is nothing you ever want to go through. I think it was the first time somebody said in almost 25 years.
It was the Supersonics.
Yeah, yeah.
A team that doesn't even exist anymore. Yes.
Yeah, they don't exist. So you don't want that ever, and that's stating the obvious. But listen, it's cleaning things up. I thought they cleaned it up against a team that forces a lot of turnovers last night. They turned it over their normal amount. The Thunder got their normal amount of steals, but they were a turnover too shy. But it's the timing of the turnovers. It's the way they happen at times that you just go, gosh, that just can't happen. Clock awareness, things like that. And the problem is when you go through stretches like this, guys will press. Guys are trying to make plays. Guys are trying to keep their team in the ball game. And maybe you go too early in the clock. Maybe you take a shot that's not really in the flow of the offense. And those mistakes against a team like Oklahoma City mount, and they don't miss opportunities. You know, years ago it was the Spurs like that when the Grizzlies made that run to the Western Conference Finals. I was talking about it with someone the other day. Every mistake the Grizzlies made in that series, especially early on, the Spurs just punished them for it. I mean, just they didn't miss an opportunity to take advantage of an error, and that's what great teams do. And that team you played last night, I think, is a great team. They're built organically. They're built through a trade of a guy that had been 1 year in Los Angeles and needed a place to really spread his wings, even though at the time Doc Rivers loved him. He wasn't going to get those minutes with Chris Paul still there or whatever the situation was at the point guard position still there. So they moved on. And, you know, their loss is Oklahoma City's gain. You see that a lot with young teams that have opportunities to play. They get a guy that's a first-round pick and really talented, but he's behind a vet. He might be the heir apparent, but you don't know when that's coming. We've seen that in the NFL with quarterbacks where, you know, you had Aaron Rodgers sitting on the bench. Imagine if Green Bay had traded him because he wasn't going to play because Brett Favre was going to get those, you know, those reps. And then he goes somewhere else and flourishes, and you go, well, you had him. Why did you let him go? And that's kind of how that works sometimes. But I think the vibe, yes, is worse than what's happening, which is understandable because it's a lot of different things. I think you see it. The frustration is there. The body language gets to you where you're going like, hey, just let it roll off your back. It's a tough stretch, but it's easier said than done. These are the most competitive people on the planet, and you have your star player who clearly is struggling with multiple aspects, whether it's physical, mental. Take your pick. He's just not the same guy as he's been in the past that we got spoiled watching. And listen, I was surprised he came back as quickly as he did from a torn labrum. I've seen that keep guys in other sports out for a full year. And then even after that, the next 6 months can be trying because you're trying to get that strength back in there. And so how much is that affecting things? And then how much are you pressing? Because you heard the comments last night. You guys are going to print whatever you want. You're going to say this. And the frustration mounts. And then you've got all the talking heads and all the things that go on, as we know, in our world with social media and people, everybody having seemingly a voice, whether it's a good voice or not. You know, that's not the point. Everybody's talking. And when everybody's talking and you're hearing it, it gets frustrating. You get frustrated. You get to the point where you're like, what do I have to do to prove to people that I care about this game, that I care about this team, that I care about what's happening? And, you know, it's natural for that frustration to settle in at times. So, yeah, man, it's tough. I mean, it's – and you know the coaches are pressing. There's obviously some criticism that can be thrown that way, and that's – I don't think that's unfair. I think they understand that too. However – it doesn't make it any easier when you're trying to push all the right buttons and seemingly every button you push, someone's got something to say about it. So, you know, not having Santi, not having Jaren, that's obviously, you know, the biggest thing, my takeaway last night, you know, not this, I don't want this to sound like it's name dropping, but talking to Mike Breen before, he goes, you know, so what's the story? I said, well, you know, Mike, the story is pretty simple right now. You don't have Jaren Jackson Jr., who very well could be the defensive player of the year. And when you don't have him in the middle, it changes what you can do defensively. It changes what you can do on the perimeter, knowing you have that guy behind you. And then just, you know, you got guys that make tough shots and seemingly just run that system. And I thought Elliott made a really good point last night, and this is where I think the Grizzlies can improve. You don't see a possession where Jalen Williams or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander either are not initiating the offense and setting guys up or getting theirs because the ball's moving and comes back to them for the time. You don't ever see a possession where they don't have it. And you saw some possessions, you know, where Ja didn't touch the ball. Dez doesn't touch the ball. You know, it's that everybody eats, which can be really good. But in times of struggle, you're like, we got to get our best guys to lead us out of this as a mentality. And sometimes that's not how it goes. So, you know, look, it's not the, you haven't played yourself out of everything, but you're putting yourself in a position where you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself with a really tough schedule ahead. You know, it's, I heard you and Jeff talking about it. You know, the two games here, Dallas is obviously an unmitigated disaster right now. And, you know, I thought Jeff brought it up. He's, hey, look, you can look at this all you want and be all frustrated, but would you rather be in Dallas right now? Would you rather be in that situation? So we'll see what happens there. And I did think the point of, you know, this New Orleans team is not the New Orleans team that it was when they were really, really struggling earlier in the season and just didn't have guys. They've got guys. They've got guys that can win games. They obviously got off of Brandon Ingram, but he wasn't going to play anyway. Zion's playing. He's kind of the guy now. They still have DeJounte Murray. They still have, you know, a Grizz killer in C.J. McCollum. So you got to go in and lock in on that one. And, you know, you got to figure out if guys are truly, you know, like Ja was saying, I'm sore. I probably shouldn't have played tonight. But if I don't play, everybody's on me, yada, yada, yada. You got to figure out what you can and can't do. And, you know, you live with the criticism or the frustration. If you play, you don't play a guy and you lose, you're just like, hey, look, what do you want me to do? I mean, once upon a time, Lionel Hollins did that at the end of the year. He got crushed by the Portland media because it pushed Portland into a place, I think, where they ended up playing the Lakers in the first round.
Yeah.
And the Grizzlies fell to 8. And this longtime reporter there, I think his name's John Canzano or something like that, basically said, this is ridiculous. You're not playing to win. You're trying to manipulate it. Good luck with the Spurs. You guys will be done in 5 games. And the Grizzlies went and upset them. And it was truly, according to what Lionel told me, and that's all I can go by. I can't get in the man's head. He said straight up, Tony Allen and Zach Randolph needed some rest. They were banged up. They were beat up. And pushing them to try to win a game where the level of your first-round opponent really isn't that different. It's not about matchups. It's about getting these guys as healthy as possible for when the playoffs start in like 3-4 days. And it worked. So, you know, there's a little bit of that in there too. But it's tough because you were sitting at the 2 spot. You seemingly had that really in your grasp, knowing that, I mean, you knew that Denver would be a factor. But you didn't think the Lakers would end up with Luka Doncic.
Yeah, I did not have that on the bingo card. Yeah,
did not have that on the bingo card anywhere. And by doing that, it kind of shifted that. And now, you know, losses are magnified. And you've got Houston, who tonight plays New Orleans. And if they win, you're tied. They have the tiebreaker. So now you're looking at 5. And so, truthfully, I get what, you know, the talk about Taylor Jenkins needs to be looking at the stands. He needs to be trying to win every game. I don't think they're ever going out to not win. But right now, you just got to focus on the 48 minutes in front of you. You got to focus on Friday night Dallas. And then when that one's done, then you can focus on Friday or Sunday night New Orleans. And then Monday night Phoenix. And just try to play your best basketball moving forward.
You know, it's kind of interesting, and maybe I'm insane. I actually thought the way they played last night, I was like, if they would have given that effort, they wouldn't be on a 3-game losing streak because they would have won a couple of those games from the weekend. But they just didn't make shots. And then on top of that, the level of opponent. I mean, I was just so impressed with how the Thunder moved the basketball. Some of their passing they're 50-11 for a reason. But like Brevin said something on the broadcast that I thought was interesting because it was so simple. Enjoy competing. Yeah. And to me, that's like, yes.
Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of been a struggle. It's like, I just don't feel like they're enjoying competing right now.
No, because I think they understand it's a little out of whack right now, and you're missing shots. And you know, they got good looks, but it's very clear to me. The one thing that I pointed out to somebody, and maybe I'm insane, but I said, hey, look, this offense was very new. People hadn't seen it. Now you've got a lot of tape on it.
Yep.
Now you're figuring out tendencies. Now you know where they're trying to get the ball to Luke Kennard. When was the last time you saw Luke Kennard get just a clear rhythm, wide open three? It hasn't happened nearly as much. He's gotten a few, but now you're pressing because you know it may be the one you get. And that changes things a little bit. And he's had a couple of tough shooting nights where it's just maybe he only gets one or two threes, and that's just not what you need. You need him getting more than that. And so, you know, I think that the scouting's there. The level of opponents gone up. We knew it was going to be a tough run. I thought the effort in most of the game against Atlanta was there, but that second quarter, you just can't have quarters where teams are just eviscerating you left and right. And they know that. They know that. But then, again, it goes back to you're frustrated. You're pressing. You're trying to do anything you can to pull yourself out, and it goes back to that, you know, line in The Replacements, the quicksand theory. The harder you struggle, the deeper you sink. And I think you're right. Just find the joy in competing again. Find the joy of, you know, being out on an NBA floor with, you know, your brothers and your teammates, and let it rip. And I thought I was really, even though it was a loss, I was encouraged by the mentality after the Cleveland game. I said, okay, yeah, you lost, but you had two threes to tie it late against a high, high level team, and they didn't go in, and you're on the road. You lost by six because you had to kind of press at the end, but you had chances to tie. And I think, you know, it's, you know, you were a baseball guy. It's like the hitter that's a, you know, a career 300 plus hitter that can't find a hole, that barrels everything up and hits it right at people, that does everything right but goes on an 0 for 16 slump. And then it's a little check swing bleeder that gets through, you know, a ground ball with seeing eyes.
Yeah, ball at the end of the bat, shot, yeah.
Yeah, that just leads him to going back to being this monster that doesn't seemingly make an out. And it's just one thing to break it open, and they're looking for that right now. And it's hard to look for. It's got to just almost happen. So I think, you know, I don't ever want to – I heard you guys talking about would you take 2-2. I liked your point. Like, you feel pretty good about Jazz and Dallas because of where the two teams are at, injuries and just talent level, and the Jazz are really struggling right now. And then you want to try to get the one of the other two on the back-to-back. And, you know, you take care of that on Sunday night if you take care of business against the Pelicans. Now, again, if you don't have Jaren, it changes the complexion. But, you know, it's, you can't cry about that because, as we said in the NBA, there is no, hey, we feel sorry for you, we're going to take it easy on you. That just doesn't happen. So lock it in, go play your best ball, and let the chips fall where they may. And, you know, in the end, you can always, you know, look back and hindsight's 20/20, and you should have done this and you should have done that. But when you're in the moment, you're trying to push any button you can to bring this team back to where they can be.
And I think, like, that's kind of the first question is, where do you think it starts to get it back going in the right direction?
Ball movement, taking better care of the ball, assist numbers going back up. The Thunder got you into playing a lot of one-on-one last night because they have the ability to switch everything. They have the length. They have the aggressiveness on defense. You know, you have the length in Jalen Williams, and then you have two guys in Case and Wallace and Lu Dort who are – built like fire hydrants.
I mean, how about Jang? Like, that guy's like coming like ninth guy off the bench. We're like, who is this?
Yeah, he came in and made a three. He was shooting like 21. Well, Jalen Williams, the other one, the Arkansas Williams, as I like to call him, because I'm not, as I said last night, I refuse to call one of them Jay Will because that is reserved for Jason Williams from Grizzlies and Kings lore and a guy that I had a wonderful working relationship with. So I'm always reserving that for him. But, you know, he's a 31% three-point shooter, and he goes 3-for-3. Now, the one that you get concerned about is Aaron Wiggins made 8-of-12 against you. Leaving him to help on defense is probably not going to work out for you. He proved that the last time. So there's some defensive principles, and Taylor's alluded to that. We've gotten away from those. Okay, well, get them back. Find a way to get them back. Like, go back to the basics. And that's been part of an issue all year long. The Grizzlies, you know, by some metrical number that people talk about, give up the most open threes in the league. I mean, just with guys not being within 6 feet of the shooter, the Grizzlies are at the bottom of that category. And that's not a category you want to be at the bottom of. You don't want to just give guys in this league open looks and go, all right, well, if you make it, great. If you don't, well, you know, that's, we're going to roll the dice with that. That's not, those aren't dice you want to roll.
Eric, safe travels. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, brother. Talk to you next week.
That is Eric Hasseltine, Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. We come back. Let's get into the list. We'll do that next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.